This is the Preacher to Preacher podcast. Today on the podcast, I interview Keaton Shrum. Keaton preaches for the Rising Church of Christ in Rising, Arkansas. Been there for a few years now, doing a good work. I appreciate him coming on the podcast, talking to us today about living a transformed life, something that's very important, especially as we live in a world that is more and more seemingly going towards secularism and away from God. We need to make the distinction in our own lives and be different from the world. He does a great job talking about that. If you enjoy what you hear here on the podcast, we hope you'll subscribe, whether through our Substack page or whatever podcasting platform you use on your mobile device, computer, whatever it may be. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. It helps other people to find us and share it. It would help us grow. If you have any topics you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast, drop us a note. We'd love to help you out. And now let's go hear what Keaton has to say. Today on the podcast, we're interviewing Keaton Shrum. Keaton, how are you today, sir?
I am blessed.
Well, we're glad you joined us here for the podcast and glad you took a little time out of your day. We were talking before we started recording here that preachers are pretty busy. I told you I kind of had a folly when I came up with the Preacher to Preacher podcast. I took for granted how busy all of us were. And you and I have been trying to get together for a few days. So thanks for cutting some time out of your schedule and being here with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're working now in ministry, and then maybe backtrack a little and tell us how you got involved and how you became a preacher.
Well, I'm at the Rising Church of Christ in Rising, Arkansas. Rising is just a little small town. It's kind of interesting because when I was first asked to come here and speak, I had no intentions of coming here to work. I thought we were just a speaking engagement. And after coming here, the elders had contacted me, their preacher who had been here for 23 years, I believe it was. He decided to retire and move back home to Tennessee. And they contacted us, and the elders were great. You know, we visited 3 or 4 times, and I liked everything about the place. And so it just worked out well for us. Been a great community. We fit in well here. I've been impressed by the entire community, how biblically minded they are. And we may not agree on everything, but at least there is some acknowledgement of God and his word. And so that's a good thing in today's societies. But before that, I was attending Brown Trail School of Preaching. I was an older student. In fact, I think I was the oldest in our class. I grew up, my dad was a preacher in Church of Christ. And so he preached in Texas and Oklahoma and Arizona. He finished the last 25 years of his ministry before passing away in Coweta, Oklahoma. So I grew up there, and pretty well most of my life was in Coweta. And, you know, I was in the church until I got in my 20s. I left for a few years. I still attended some, but not faithfully as I should have. And thanks to the grace of God, there was, you know, things happened there that made me realize I got to get back to the church. And so after doing so, I started filling in for different people here and there. And eventually that led to taking over where my dad was when he passed away. And I stayed there for a couple of years before we, you know, deciding, hey, we need to go to school. Are you serious about this? I told my wife, I'm going to keep doing it. I need to go learn how. So we went to Brown Trail, and it was a great 2 years, and really had no idea we would ever end up in Arkansas, but here we are, and glad to be here.
Well, we're glad you're in the area, and I'm glad you made that transition back to ministry. I was talking with you earlier that, you know, one of the things I've learned since doing this, and I don't know how many preachers I've interviewed now, most of them I know. I mean, most everybody I've talked to so far are people that I've at least been associated with. I met you through a gospel meeting where I was preaching near where you were. You happened to visit, so that's how we connected. So I don't know much about you, but one thing I've learned is that people come to ministry from a million different places. Some guys, you know, right out of high school, they grew up, they always wanted to be a preacher. Other guys like me never envisioned they'd be a preacher. And people like you who leave in later in life come into ministry. So it's pretty cool. That's something that's just fun for me personally, and maybe interesting for those who listen. You talked about kind of being out of the church for a while and coming back, and maybe that's a good segue into your topic. So what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I'd like to talk about the transformed life. You know, the Apostle Paul comes in Romans chapter 12, really with the second thesis statement for the book, or the second major section of the book, and starts describing this call for a transformed life. course, out of the New King James, you know, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable, perfect will of God. And that whole phrase there, you know, just that, those two verses really, when you get to looking at them, man, what a call, you know. I mean, the idea of a living sacrifice, that alone just seems a little ironic.
Yeah, because typically, in view of biblical history, if you read your Bible, if you're familiar with your Bible, if you think about a sacrifice, you might think about Abraham and Isaac, you know, where's the lamb? You might think about the sacrifices at the temple or the tabernacle, and generally there is a death involved there. So Paul says that we're not dead, we're living sacrifices.
Yep. Yeah, very interesting idea just to think about it. But, you know, Paul begins by saying, I beseech, and I mean, if you're familiar with the original language at all, that beseech word is kind of interesting because that's the word to call alongside. And I stop and think about that. You know, it's really what he's doing. He's calling these people alongside him because he knows exactly what a transformed life looks like. And we think, you go back to Acts 9, you think about Paul and who he used to be. This guy has transformed his life. He has truly become a living sacrifice. And so he's going to urge them by the mercies of God to come and do the same. It's just a beautiful picture to me.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you mentioned that about how he had already done this. You know, when he writes to Timothy, and maybe the final thing he ever writes to Timothy, at least the one we have in 2 Timothy, he makes that statement before he says, I've fought the good fight. In that passage we're all familiar with there in chapter 4, he says, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering. And, you know, and he says the time of my departure is at hand. And I think what he's alluding to there, he is metaphorically saying, I have, and the drink offering, of course, was a type of sacrifice that was poured on top of the other sacrifice. And Paul's saying, you know, I've added my life to the work that Christ did. You know, he did the work of saving us and building the church and all this, you know, starting the new kingdom. But Paul said, I've put my life in there. I've added it to that. And I always thought that was an interesting concept, is that every Christian, and you know, Paul talks about in Ephesians 2, that the foundation is Christ, but we're built on the foundation of him and the apostles. And so, you know, they as well gave their lives to bring us where we are today. And every Christian that's worked in ministry, every Christian that has served Christ, they've added to that. They've come alongside Paul. And that's a really cool idea there.
Well, and, you know, when I think about that, I always think back to Matthew 16, and as Jesus has given his call for those that want to follow him, you know, deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me. Well, if calls you to come beside him, why? Because he's doing just that. He's following Christ. Well, why would we need to follow Christ? Well, because he's going to lead us to victory. We can't walk beside him because he's got to lead the way for it. But we can actually walk with Paul and the other faithful men and women throughout history. And sometimes I think when we think about the church, it's easy to think about our local congregation, you know, and the place we attend. But church is so much bigger than that, you know, to realize that those that we read about in Scripture, man, they're part of the church too. And now we get to be a part of that with them. And it's just amazing how the Lord's plans fit perfectly to bring everybody into the church, all who are willing to accept it, you know.
Yeah. I was just, you know, you talk about we can't walk with Jesus. We kind of follow him, but we can walk with Paul. What a great concept. And what Paul say, imitate me as I imitate Christ, you know? And so we have this picture of us sort of modeling what Jesus said. As Jesus said, you know, take up your own cross. And so there's this personal sacrifice we have to make to follow him. You said you have a gospel meeting coming up, where you're going to be talking about this, for the average Christian or for the average person in our communities, when we think about this idea of being a living sacrifice, and just kind of curious your thoughts on this, do you think there's been a disconnect on this idea of having to give up things to serve Jesus? You know, I'm seeing that, and just from my point of view, I'm wanting your take on that, but do you think we've lost this idea that to follow Jesus requires sacrifice first?
I believe so, absolutely. When you think about Paul saying, do not be conformed to this world, the word there is actually, you know, to this age. So we're talking about all the things that, society changes so often, getting wrapped up into what is going on at the time that you live in. And when you think about the Roman culture of that day, to me, it reminds me a lot of America. And those people were very proud to be Romans. You know, they looked down on those who weren't Romans. And so to not be conformed to that age is, I mean, we got to think about the same thing today. And yeah, if you consider the age that we live in, as opposed to what it might have been 200 years ago in America, or 1,000 years ago across, you know, the seas somewhere, everyone has an age and a world that is known to them. And that's what Paul's calling for. Let that stuff go. You talk to people and you ask them, well, you know, tell me about yourself. How many people identify as an American before they identify as a Christian? Not that being American is wrong, not at all. But if we're going to be members of a heavenly kingdom, we're going to be kingdom citizens, then we've got to start having that mindset, truly set our mind on things above. And really, I think that's what Paul lays out well through the next few chapters here. Is he starts this idea of, you know, this is what it takes to live as the people of the church. He's been talking in chapters 1 through 11 really about what it takes to be the church. And now this is what it takes to live as these people.
Yeah, I think that's
sacrifice is a huge part of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Keaton. And you know, you're talking about this devotion to the heavenly kingdom above America. I remember getting in trouble with some veterans, and especially early on, Paul says our citizenship is in heaven, Philippians 3:20. And, mm-hmm. you know, I made this point, and some people say, well, America's great. I think we have seen in the last, this is personal opinion. I don't have a book, chapter, and verse for this. This is just my own opinion. But I have seen in the last several years a sort of cynicism building about America, because the America, the nostalgic America that a lot of people grew up with, about this is the righteous country and we're the best country, and you know, all this is really, and especially now with the morality going the way it is, it's a lot easier, I think, for us to say, look, you can't just be like the average American. The average American today isn't necessarily a godly person or a righteous person or doesn't live a godly lifestyle. And maybe 40, 50 years ago, we kind of thought, well, look, being a good American means being a godly person. They're the same thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a little bit different to differentiate that. I've just wondered that personally and kind of seen that. But, you know, Paul says you can't be like the world around you. You've got to be willing to be distinct. You've got to be willing to be weird. I mean, really, you know, Peter says, you know, his own peculiar people is what one version says. It's a strange people. So you're exactly right that we've got to be careful that we don't turn into an American first and then try to fit our Christianity into that, because it just won't work.
Well, and you know, I didn't think like that way. You know, 15 years ago, I was American. You know, I mean, I was red, white, blue all the way, you know, and I still love and appreciate this country. But the more that I've grown with the Lord, the more that I realize, hey, you know, that's not where we're meant to be. You know, America cannot be everything to us. And that could be true for no matter what nation you live in. You know, there are people that could be in any part of the world and feel the same way. But when you go back to verse 1 of Romans 12, as he says, you know, present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable, right? Well, if we're going to be holy, okay, we understand you've got to be set apart. Acceptable, well-pleasing to God. And then he says, which is your reasonable service. Now, service often, you know, rendered maybe devotion would be a good idea, but that's just what you should expect to do because of what God's done for you. And to be set apart and to be well-pleasing to God, that should be the desire of our hearts.
Yeah, it's it should be something that comes from the inside. And I think that's exactly important. I was actually looking at the word conformed here. Sorry if I was a little distracted. But this word conform, you know, I think about that and I think about a mold. And, you know, you take a piece of metal and maybe you're stamping coinage or you're stamping the molds for something fashioned out of metal, and that metal shapes to the form of that mold, and that's the idea of something being conformed. And I think here what Paul is saying is don't let this world shape the way you behave and the way you think and the way you act. But there has to be this transformation that as you says, comes from the renewing of our mind. It comes from the inside out. We have to make a decision that I'm not going to look like everyone else. I'm not going to let the world shape me. And you know, that's really important. Back in the Sermon on the Mount, famously, Jesus talks about us being salt and light, Matthew 5:13 and then 14 respectively. And, you know, he says, hey, you know, salt and light, those are two things that transform what they interact with. They're not transformed by the things that interact with them. You know, they are influencing agents is one way we might say that. So what Paul is saying here is much the same, is that you can't let the world shape you, but this happens by the renewing of your mind. Just curious. And, you know, you mentioned that you had kind of stepped away from the church for a while. I'm assuming it was probably not physical circumstances that brought you back, but probably there was some sort of a change in your thinking that got you back to where you are today. And am I assuming correctly?
You know, I would still attend services even at that time. I wasn't faithful as I should have been, you know? And, so I was one of those that came in here and there instead of all the time as would be expected. And I often think about Lot, you know, when Peter, I think it was the New King James, Second Peter, he talks about Lot and how he vexed his soul. I kind of think that's, you know, for me, it bothered me, you know, and it finally just took me realizing, hey, this. So I don't really know that there was any specific thing other than just right. It just weighed heavily on my mind because I knew better.
And, but it was, I guess what I'm getting
when
at,
my
it was,
dad died,
oh, I'm sorry.
When my dad died, I think that's, I don't know, maybe what really pushed me into ministry, not intentionally. I really didn't expect to go into ministry. I was just stepping up to fill a hole, you know, fill a gap. But the more that gave me a reason to study deeper than I ever had really on a continual basis instead of just here and there. And I think that's what just, you know, drew the fire to keep doing it and to keep preaching. But as far as getting more active in the church, I really can't think of any one incident. I think it just weighed on my mind, you know, for the short time that I was not where I should have been.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I guess I was trying to articulate there, and I may not have done it well, is that it was more of an inside out thing than it was, you know, well, my life hasn't been very good. Let me go to church and see if God will make life better kind of thing. You know, and I think some people try to do that is mm-hmm. I see that happen sometimes. You know, life gets hard and a family will show up to start attending services, which is a great thing. We won't, you know, Christians should worship God and they should. But if our motivation is an outside in kind of thing, that, well, I'm going to serve God so my life will get better, or that so my outside circumstances, you know, Paul says it's a renewing of your mind. It's an inner transformation. And I was just highlighting that you had mentioned earlier, that we serve God with our hearts and it's got to come from the inside. And that's what Paul says, is there's this renewing of our mind, that we literally think differently about the world and what's important in the world. We talked about the different views we've had on our own country. I used to be big into politics, and I still like to observe it from a distance now, but I try not mm-hmm. to share as much, you know, on social media and get as wrapped up in politics as I used to, because I realize now that, you know, it's really unimportant at the end of the day. You know, 100 years from now, there'll still be politicians. If the world's still here, they'll still be arguing over issues, and everyone will still think it's the most important election of all time. And God will still be sovereign and Christ will still be king. And so, you know, I've had a transformation of mind that has helped me to kind of have some peace over that, because I realize now that God is still in control, and ultimately he's going to work it all out. So I think that's sort of what Paul is talking about here, is this idea that you've got to just think about the world differently, and it's got to come from the inside. And you mentioned you got to love the Lord your God. So I'll shut up for a minute.
If you look at verses, I've got to give Kevin Rhodes credit for this, but if you look at verses 3-16, it really does focus more on the idea of the transformation of mind you move past that verses 17 through chapter 13, verse 14, the end of 14 or 13, more of the transformation of the will. And then he picks up with more of the transformation of the heart. And you really do have, because in order to have your heart completely transformed, well, I've got to change my mind because I've got to start thinking godly things. And I have to change my will because I've got to start willing what's better for others and willing, you know, God's will in my life so that I can have my heart truly changed. And I think that just makes perfect sense. And when you think about having this transformed mind, one thing back in 1 Timothy, Paul's given his call to pray, right? And one of the things he's telling Timothy is we need to be praying for our kings and those in government or whatever, however it's worded there. And I brought that up a while back. When you think about, say, our president or the governor, whoever it is that you don't really agree with, what's more common, your complaints or your prayers for them? You know? And to me, that's a sign of a transformed life. When I hear people say, well, help our government to make godly decisions, we're asking for ungodly people to make godly decisions, you know, in such a prayer. What we need to be praying for is their soul. Let Lord have open opportunity for someone to reach them. Because no matter what they do into this nation, if they're outside of Christ, we know what they're headed for. And that should be of a deeper concern.
Yeah, that's a transformation that certainly can happen and change. And I appreciate you highlighting all that. That's exactly what I'm getting at. It's just a different way of looking at the world. So instead of saying, well, we want our government to run in such a way that it makes life easy for Christians, you're sitting here saying, no, we need to be praying that those people in government become Christians. And what a different way to think about the world and think about the world we live in.
Sorry, I cut you off.
A little lag on Zoom, everybody listening. So if you hear us talking over each other, we're not trying to be rude. Go ahead.
Yes. That's a process, though. I think that's important to point out. You know, a transformed life is not something that's going to happen overnight. This is something that's going to take time. You have to make, you know, an effort to start incorporating these things in your life as you grow in the Lord. You know, the more that you spend time with the Lord, the more you're going to want to be a living sacrifice. And so you're going to make mistakes in those areas. But again, don't give up. Just realize it's not going to happen immediately. You don't come to the church, you're baptized, all of a sudden have a transformed life. No, that's when the work starts and you've got to put forth the effort to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I've actually got pulled up and if I'm stepping on some of your material, I apologize, but over in Ephesians 4, verses 20 down through about 26 or following. To me, there's a parallel here to exactly what Paul is saying when he says, but you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. And so he says, there's this, you've learned something. There's the mind, you know, your mind's involved. He says that you put off concerning your former conduct, the old man, which grows corrupt according to deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you may put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another's. Be angry and do not sin, and do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. And he goes on, you know, let him who stole steal no longer. And he keeps on going. And what Paul is saying there is it's the same thing, same author, same spirit, by the way, inspiring him. But the message is the same. Once we learn the gospel, we have to then let it affect our mind, and we have to get rid of some things and clean, you know, just think about your mind like a garage. Paul says, hey, you've got to clean out some stuff so you can make room for this other stuff. And he says the stuff you need to put off or get rid of, throw out to the curb, your former conduct, you know, the old man, the deceitful lust. And he says, now you do that so you can put on this new man and move all this good stuff into your garage, you know, love and peace and speaking truth and not losing your temper and all this stuff that he goes on to outline there in Ephesians 4. And you know, I love that you said it's not something that happens overnight, because I think I've tried to stress this. We had a spell when I first moved here in 2015. Probably from into 2015 into 2016, 17. We had about 18 months there, and we baptized like 17 people. And I think the youngest one was 30 years old. And I mean, we were, you know, everybody's like, oh, y'all are on fire. But we had, a, you know, 15 or 16 or 17 babies in the church is what we had. You know, they were 30 years old, but they were babies. They were new Christians. And they were just now trying to come out of the world.
Chapter verse 4, you know, but for me personally, it had become that way. And I think that's part of the growing process. The more you spend time with the Lord, the more these things are going to happen. You were talking before we went live here about music. You don't really listen to music anymore, you know. And, man, I used to be a country music fan. Old country music, I loved it. And I remember one day I was driving down the road, cranking out some Merle Haggard, right? And I'm thinking, it hit me. Wait a second. How can I listen to this and glorify something that I could not sing or glorify about any other time, you know? So for me, that was a moment that I realized, hey, I've got to change the music I listen to. Now, other people can listen to it and be fine with it. But for me personally, I reached a point where, hey, that wasn't acceptable to me, you know. And so I'm kind of the same way now. I don't hardly listen to any music. Not that I'm against it. You know, there's some of it that's still decent and I enjoy it. But I found other things to be more edifying.
Yeah, I agree with that. We found a CD case. It's been a few years ago. We were moving or cleaning up or something, and I found one of my old CD cases. And I was showing the boys, my kids, they've never, you know, a CD case. My wife and I both have them. And they're like, what is this, you know, ancient thing? And so we started going through the CDs, and I was looking. I was like, ooh, I wouldn't want my boys to listen to that. Ooh, I wouldn't want my boys to listen. And I was like, wait, well, I was listening to this when I was their age. And, you know, because my boys are 17 and 19, and I was thinking, you know, I've come a long ways, and that does happen. It can be music. It can be personal convictions about a lot of things that we may have, but you're exactly right. There's this constant transformation of our mind, the way we see the world, the way we think about things. And this transformation, that word transformed, back in Romans 12, to take us back to your starter text, you got anything on the meaning of that word?
Well, you know, I think about that as a caterpillar. I mean, it's, you know, to be morphed is what it is. And really that's what's happening. You are, as a babe in Christ, you become cocooned. Now you've broken out of the shell and you're becoming something different than you were. Used to, you were conformed to this world, but now you have been morphed. You've been transformed into something better. And, you know, that may be a big part of it, is realizing that there's nothing you can give up in this world that's not going to make you better. You know, if it's a worldly thing, letting go of that and using that in your transformation of being something for God, something that is holy and well-pleasing to God, you're always going to have a blessing in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that idea, that metamorpho, you know, where we get metamorphosis from is the exact word. So the caterpillar is the best definition there. You go from one thing and you're something totally different. You know, a caterpillar doesn't look like a butterfly, not at all, but it's the same creature. It's just been transformed. And so it's a really good, Paul, you know, sticks that nice little metaphor in there for us, to help us understand that before we wrap this thing up today.
Man, we could go all the way through chapter 15, so we better wrap it up whenever you're ready.
Well, we could. I had one more thing, and I thought you might want to talk about. I actually wrote an article on this a couple of weeks ago, where Paul says here at the end, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. I think the word here is discernment. You know, once we have renewed, exactly. once we've renewed our mind, and once we've transformed our life and let God, you know, through the teaching of the gospel, change the way we think, then we can have a lot better discernment in life about what's good and what's bad. And
I think you're so, exactly right. That's, you know, that's exactly what I've, you know, that's how I see it too, because we're never going to, you know, we may not know exactly what God's thinking. I'm not saying that, but when you make a decision in your life, you should be able to know, okay, if I go to the left, that's going to move me away from God. If I go to the right, that would line up more with what would lead me closer to God. And that's what's proving that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You're able to use that discernment's the perfect word for that.
Yeah, it's and it's hard. Sometimes it's really hard to know what's the right thing to do here. What should I do here? But it's a lot easier once we've kind of taken worldliness out of the box. I see a lot of Christians families, especially younger Christians or immature Christians, and I'm not judging them or criticizing them. I'm just by observation, just saying that do struggle with a lot of these decisions where they're having to kind of balance involvement in the world or activities in the world versus spiritual things, and they're, oh, this is a really tough thing. And I think it becomes easier, the, like you said, you know, the more you grow and the closer you get to the Lord, the easier it gets to say, well, he's going to come first. And it's kind of a no-brainer. You know, I used to work with a guy when I was building houses, and one of his favorite lines, he'd say, well, that's a no-brainer right there. And, you know, he'd been doing it so long in construction, a young guy would say, hey, how do I cut this or do this or whatever? And he'd say, oh, that's a no-brainer. Well, it's a no-brainer for him because he'd been doing it for 40 years. And he had, you know, his will was honed to be a pretty good carpenter. And so for a young guy, you had to do some more thinking. And I think the same thing's true with a Christian. You know, it's we hone ourselves and God transforms us and our minds are renewed. And then it kind of becomes a no-brainer. We can just kind of intuitively know, okay, this is going to honor God. And this is over here is not. So this is where I need to go.
You know, and that's exactly the reason Paul tells over in Titus about the older men, the older women.
Yes.
Reaching out to the younger, because you've been there, you've done it, you know, reach out and help. And I think that's one thing that's lacking in the church too. And we'll save that for another time, but we've kind of lost that mentor mentality for those who are new as Christians.
Yeah, whether new Christians or young Christians, either one. Everybody wants a youth group at their church, but there's a danger when we create a youth group or a college group or a young adult group. There's this danger that I've seen where we kind of segregate off part of the church and isolate them from, you know, you put all the youth in there with the young minister and they don't get any influence from the 80-year-old. And that just happened. So when I got into editing our audio recording, for whatever reason, the Zoom recording cut off the last few minutes of our conversation. And so I, or you, don't have the ending of that conversation. But I appreciate Keaton coming on the podcast. The last 2 or 3 minutes were his best. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say, Keaton, man, you knocked it out of the park. But only I heard that, so I'll just have to keep it to myself. But it's a great study. Hope you guys will visit Romans chapter 12. And I'll keep navigating this crazy digital world we're in. If you have any suggestions for content for the podcast or on our blog, anything you'd like me to write about, let me know. I'd love to get that out for you. Hope I can help you out with that. I appreciate your time. And until next time, may our God bless.